So I would like to make clear that the Torah has beautiful passages of poetry, soaring moments of inspiration, profound and important insights into human life, and that you have chosen to come on the morning on which it discusses skin diseases. Leprosy, skin lesions. I want you to know I am filled with admiration for our bat mitzvah this morning, who managed to wrest a meaningful drasha, a meaningful talk, out of what is, I must say, just about the most uninspiring, if dermatologically helpful, bit of scripture known to humanity. It's one of the reasons why the rabbis, in talking about Mitzora, will talk about Motzi Shem Ra, since it shares the same sound, which means gossip, and invariably on this Shabbat, people will talk about how you should talk. But I'm not going to talk about that. Instead, I want to point out that the reverse of what the Torah talks about is what afflicts us today. I don't mean there's an epidemic of good skin. What I mean is that the Torah talks about how somebody's internal corruption, disease, immorality is reflected externally. The person who is unkind, not good, a gossip, evil, somehow shows that to the community and has to be healed. All of us understand this idea. In fact, in some ways, it's enshrined in rabbinic literature, where the rabbis say that nobody should enter the house of study if tocho is in kavoro, if their inside is not like their outside. And we have a very human predisposition to assume that external ugliness means internal corruption. But that means we also have a predisposition to the reverse, that beauty means goodness. And that is a societal disease. In fact, believe it or not, according to one of the leading philosophers of modern times, it was the Jews that stuck their, that put their stake down precisely against this idea. Nietzsche writes about the Greeks. He says they believed that the beautiful, the rich, the successful were the beloved of God. And the Jews came along and said, no. It's the poor, the despised, the widow, the orphan, the forgotten, the bereaved, the bereft, the lonely, the alone. They're the ones that God has loved. And this idea, the idea that external beauty doesn't necessarily denote internal goodness, this is an idea that we could stand remembering. Because, my friends, in one way or another, we are the beautiful people. By which I don't mean that you're better looking than you are, but I mean that our external has all the marks of virtue. What is it to be virtuous? In our society, it is to succeed. If you work hard and you are virtuous and you try, you will succeed. And what is success? The only measurement of success that we have that is reliable is money. Therefore, if you have money, you have virtue. And even though all of us know that that's not exactly true, we also know that on some deep level it resonates in us. That when we see someone who's successful, we assume that they have a whole series of virtues that this other person who is not successful does not have. Because we know that if you're good and you try, then you will succeed. Despite the fact that there's a lot of counter evidence in the world. And one of the things that this has led to is an increasing difference in our society between those who succeed and those who don't. It's what the philosopher Michael Sandel calls the skyboxification of America. He said, when I was a kid, you could get better seats at a baseball game for a couple of dollars. But the rain fell on rich and poor alike. Now, you sit up in the skybox, and your experience is essentially different from all those people who sit down below. The differentiation between success and everybody else is increasingly great. And while I don't have any economic theories to offer, I do have a Jewish response to suggest, which is that what that means Jewishly is that the people who succeed have an ever greater obligation to care for those who don't. I don't care whether you're on the right of the political spectrum or on the left, whether you think government should do this much or this much, neither of those things and neither of those opinions absolve us from the recognition that being rich doesn't make you virtuous unless you're virtuous. That in fact, having is just an indication that you owe. Because everybody here knows, and if you don't know it, allow me to remind you, that most of what you have is not due to your merit. You could have worked just as hard and been born in a relocation camp in the Sudan, and you'd be dirt poor. Or you could have been born with a brain that didn't work very well. Or you could have been born into a family or a situation that destroyed your talents or your possibilities. Or you might not have known that person that gave you your first leg up. Or you might have been born into an age in which there weren't the tools that would enable you to succeed. If you make a fortune in software, it's really good that you were born at a time in which there was software. But guess what? That doesn't mean you invented it. When we really start to think about our success, we realize how much of it is predicated on things we had nothing to do with. I hope you're comfortable, but my guess is you didn't invent seats or air conditionings or floors or ceilings or lightings or microphones. And yet, we take such pride in everything we do as though nobody handed me anything. How many times have you heard that? Nobody gave me anything except the entire societal structure in which I succeeded. As Mark Twain put it, a self-made man is as likely as a self-laid egg. And yet we feel like we have no responsibility to the people who didn't make it like we made it. So let me tell you a story from a somewhat different age and ask you if this would happen today. Yud Lamed Peretz, who was one of the greatest Yiddish writers, writing 100 years ago, which after all is not 10,000 years ago, he talks about what happened to his grandfather. His grandfather was a merchant and he had gone away on a trip. And he came back, and he celebrated Shabbat, and he was in perfectly good spirits, and no one knew anything was wrong. And then that Saturday night after Shabbat was over, he called together all of his creditors. Everybody he owed money or merchandise to, and he said, listen, I have lost everything. Everything on this trip. I don't have a penny left. So my wife, Fanala, he said, take off your jewelry. Here's all our cups, all our silver, all our everything, and we give this to you, my creditors, because I have nothing left. And now I'm going to quote to you the last line. Peretz ends the story about his grandfather with a single line, and he makes no additional comment. This is the last line of the story. He says, but the creditors wouldn't take it. They wouldn't take anything from this man because they felt the responsibility. They felt a connection. They weren't up in the skybox, and he wasn't down below, and they felt his fate has nothing to do with mine. Kol Yisrael arevim zev lazeh, our ancestors used to say. All of Israel is responsible for one another, and when you extend that, it's true of all of humanity. And yet, we feel as though not only does our wealth give us virtue, it also insulates us from the responsibility of caring. And even though you can't see it, if you feel that way, you suffer from all the lesions and the ugliness that the Torah talks about. It is a long way from Peretz's grandfather's creditors to the rapacity of some today who take much and give nothing. Even when the Torah is talking about skin diseases, it's talking about us. It is wonderful to have. Nobody should feel guilty for being wealthy. What they should feel is responsible. Good fortune is good, but it's supposed to be shared. It's remarkable to me that people manage to believe that they don't have enough to give when they have many, many, many thousands of times what other people have who manage to give. The first responsibility of somebody who receives tzedakah, according to the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, the first responsibility of somebody who receives charity is to turn around and give charity. Everyone is supposed to give. Of your time, of your expertise, and of what we like to euphemistically call your resources. In other words, your money. It makes a difference. It changes lives. It enables other people who are down there to hope one day they can be up there. Don't deceive yourself. Don't say, I got this on my own, so they have to. If you don't want to give, at least be honest. Say, I was lucky and I don't care about it. That's honest. Otherwise, say what you should say, which is, having been given so much, I can't wait to help someone else enjoy the good fortune that I do. According to the Talmud, Jews are Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim, compassionate people and the children of compassionate people, and then it goes further and says, and anyone who is not compassionate has no right to call him or herself a Jew. So remember how lucky we are. Remember that we are lucky beyond the wildest dreams of our ancestors of 100, 200, 500 years ago. They couldn't imagine the good fortune we have. And yet, we are focused on what we don't have. Instead, be grateful, be good, and be giving, so that your inside will be as beautiful as your outside. Shabbat shalom.